What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, and special guest today, co-founder of Red Team Scouting, Alex West. What's up, guys?
What's up? I am pumped to be here. Thanks for inviting me. Thanks for having me on, and I'm super excited to talk about the Kings.
Yeah, Alex, pleasure. Thank you for hopping on the pod. Definitely been a mutual follower of yours for a while on Twitter, and now we have to get to talk hoops. And Nick, as always, a pleasure.
And like Alex hinted at, we're going to be previewing the Kings today, continuing the NBA Outlet preview series. Like we mentioned, we're doing a little bit different this year, going by divisions. So Pacific Division first, with the Kings, Clippers, Lakers, and Warriors already done. But before we get started, quick reminder, you can check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. But talking about the Kings from last year before we dive into next season, 39-43, ninth in the West. One of probably the most fun teams in the league because expectations weren't really high for them and they won 39 games. So how would you summarize their season in an emoji?
Let me give you my emoji. First of all, I'm going to show my age because earlier today when I was doing research, I had to go and look at what the emojis were because I'm not an emoji user. I'm 31, which doesn't feel old, but then when you asked this question, it made me feel old. So to answer this question, I'm going to say it's the trending up emoji. I found this one. If this is not an emoji people use, I'm sorry. But there was one with a little graph line and it was trending up. So that's what I think the Kings are.
That's a good emoji use. I did the emoji with the guy smiling with his tongue hanging out because I think we finally saw some progress with the Sacramento Kings after years of the DeMarcus Cousins era of this team kind of being stagnant. We saw some real progress and we saw a young core develop.
Yeah, and I'm going with ever like smiley, happy face they have because it just felt like such a fun season for the Kings. And that's not something we've kind of associated with them over the last couple of years. Like Corey hinted at, DeMarcus Cousins, that whole era. And just year after year, it just felt like they're in the bottom of the West. And last year, finally competitive and almost snuck into the playoffs. But on that front, what would you say was the biggest positive takeaway from last season?
Obviously, it starts with one thing, and that's De'Aaron Fox making the leap. Fox came in. He was the fifth pick in the draft in 2017. I think there was a lot of reservations. He shot 25% at Kentucky, and I think generally that people had reservations about his ability to space the floor and to just run an offense, but he certainly took the leap. Last season, he shot 37% from three-point after shooting 25% at Kentucky. That kind of improvement just shows that he has the capability to continue to improve. And I think that's the biggest takeaway. If I had one more really quick one, I want to say that Marvin Bagley post All-Star break was really impressive. He played 19 games. He averaged 18.5 points, 9.2 rebounds. He shot 39% from three. This is another player that people had reservations about. And to see him blossom in the way that he did, obviously a lot still improve. Obviously, the question of positionality is huge for him. But I think seeing his improvement post All-Star break is something that just has to be super, super encouraging for Kings fans.
Yeah, De'Aaron Fox was definitely the guy I stuck at the most for me. But because you used him, I'll go a different way, and I'll go with Buddy Hield. We really saw Buddy Hield kind of burst onto the scene, more so of a volume scorer. Went from 11.7 shots per game to 16.6 last year. Scored 20.7 points per game on 45, 42, and 88 shooting splits, which is very good. And it was nice to see Buddy Hield finally take that step as a spot-up shooter and become, you know, the solid number two guy behind De'Aaron Fox on this roster with a lot of potential. And that was fun to watch.
Corey, I want to add to that. I think there's some really interesting stuff with Hield. He aged 2 years in 1 year, which we all sort of know that. But he played all 82 games. He was also the fastest paced player in the entire league. And that's something that we're going to talk about a lot this evening is the Kings sort of dictating that pace. And Hield is absolutely integral to that. I think seeing him come along, his scoring average has literally increased every year since his freshman year at Oklahoma. And I think that's something that just says this guy can get buckets. How does that fit in with the team scheme is hard to say, but it certainly is something that you want in a player, particularly a guy who shoots 42% from three.
Yeah, obviously shooting is extremely important in the NBA nowadays. And my takeaway is kind of a combination of both of what you guys said. You know, Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox, both guys really good and two really big building blocks for them moving forward. Just something they've established and their young prospects have kind of finally developed in the past, kind of alluding to what we spoke about earlier. You know, the Kings haven't had success in terms of the draft picks or just overall success developing those guys. So Fox and Hill hitting, I think it's a really big step for them. But on a negative note, what was the biggest negative takeaway from last season?
Yeah, I think when it comes down to thinking about what they could have improved, and you know, obviously Coach Yeager no longer with the program, brought in Luke Walton. So there has been some turnover. But I think the biggest thing for me was getting the five best players on the floor. And last year, to me, that was Fox, Bogdanovich, Hield, Bagley, and Giles. Now this year, there's going to be some situations where that may not be the case. And I think that flexibility is nice. But finding out who your go-to five is going to be in crunch time is absolutely critical for this team. And I feel like that's something they never quite put together last year.
The negative takeaway, I don't really think there is one that stands out to me. Maybe just the fact that they kind of stalled in the second half of the year. I think the schedule might have gotten a little bit tougher. But you saw these young guys develop. So for me, there wasn't really a major negative. This is what you really wanted to see from these young guys.
Yeah, I think kind of what Alex alluded to, you could look at coaching as a negative takeaway. I think maybe it would have been really nice, and this is probably being overly optimistic, of them squeezing into the playoffs and getting that experience. But obviously the West is super tough, and no one expected them to be at 39 wins as it is. So moving on from last season, going to this year, OTG Power Rankings via our staff have the Kings ranked at number 19. Do you guys think this is fair, too high, too low?
I got to count backwards. Like, I got to figure this out. The West is just so loaded. I mean, when you look at this, there are seven teams that are pretty close to shoe-ins. You know, when you talk about, obviously, Houston, Golden State, L.A., both L.A. teams, Houston.
Denver, Utah.
Denver. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you can just rip off seven teams there and say, these teams are probably pretty locked into the playoffs. Then you get to this next tier of teams where you've got like New Orleans, you've got Dallas, you've got Sacramento, and teams that are cagey. I mean, you can still probably throw Minnesota in there, though I guess they're less enticing. So, I mean, I don't know if 19 is exactly where I would put them, but it's very, very hard to see them creeping up too high just because they're not experienced enough to really go to war with some of these other playoff teams.
It's fair, I think, to a degree. This puts them at 10th in the Western Conference, with the, you know, a couple of teams right ahead of them would be the Pelicans and Mavs. I could see the Kings passing both those guys in the rankings at some point this year and battling for that 8 seed. So I do think, as we go farther into this podcast, the Kings have an extremely good chance of making the playoffs this year, on some of the additions they made, which, again, we'll talk about in a little bit. So I think it's fair going into the year, but I could see the Kings easily moving up, a decent amount of spots, you know, 2-3 spots in a couple of months.
Yeah, I think going to the year, this range is probably fair, but there's definitely an argument for them to be a few spots higher. You know, you can make an argument for them to be higher than some of the other Western Conference teams in front of them, but a lot of it's going to be how this team gels and how coaching picks up. And talking about coaching, this offseason was pretty busy for them. Not only did they make some big offseason moves, they hired a new head coach, Luke Walton. What do you guys think about this?
Yeah, it's an interesting hire. I mean, if you look at just the numbers, there's not a tremendous amount of difference in Yeager and Walton stylistically, particularly in regards to two things. Last season, the Kings were 20th in three-point attempts. They were 4th in three-point percentage. The Lakers were 17th in three-point attempts. They were 29th in percentage, which is a big difference. But one of the main things at his introductory press conference that Luke Walton harped on is, we're going to shoot a lot of three-pointers. And I think everybody kind of wants to see that three-point attempt number go up, and that is pretty firmly on Luke Walton's shoulders. I think tempo and three-point attempts are the big numbers to follow with this team. And I kind of think that his job security, though I don't know that any, you know, first-year head coach is in tremendous danger, I think his job security kind of rests on the idea that he can improve both of those numbers.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Walton obviously was kind of the – I don't want to say he was the scapegoat for the Lakers, but, you know, we heard the rumblings all year that he wasn't going to make it probably past this season, and that came to fruition. I do think there's still a lot of potential in Luke Walton, a guy who likes to push the pace. We saw that in his first year with the Lakers. This Kings team, as you alluded to earlier, Alex, does have a faster pace mentality to them. I mean, Luke Walton might be able to bring out more so of the guys like De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, and company. So I think it's a solid hiring.
Yeah, I think Luke Walton was definitely an interesting hire. You know, the whole Lakers situation is kind of hard to break down. Even his Golden State time is hard to break down because obviously it's one of the best teams we've ever seen. Then with the Lakers, like Corey said, you know, we saw him develop some of the young guys. Then you bring in LeBron James and everything kind of changes. And the expectations were so crazy. And I think the roster wasn't really good. So then it's just like, okay, is it really on Luke? What's his coaching like? What's LeBron saying? That whole atmosphere. I think this will be his real first test as a head coach. So we really don't know a ton about him. Now moving over to draft picks, not a crazy draft for the Kings. Justin James with the 40th pick and Kyle Guy with the 55th pick. Thoughts on these two?
I really like these pickups. Justin James is a guy who was a senior this year, went to Wyoming. A guy I got to see in person at the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Versatility is probably the name of the game. He's a guy who can handle the ball a little bit. He can do some spot-up shooting. He can do a little bit of everything. And you see that they also picked up another guy on a two-way contract, Isaiah Pinero, out of San Diego. Kind of a similar situation. He played a lot of the three for San Diego, but he also is a guy who can handle the ball, run a little bit of pick and roll, defend multiple positions. With those two guys, I think versatility is what will get them on the floor. The Kings still a little bit shaky sort of on the wings. I'm not super comfortable with their depth right now. And I think maybe one of those two guys could sort of showcase himself and get into the rotation. Obviously with Guy, you got a guy who's 6'3". He's 170 pounds. he's one of the best shooters in college basketball last year. And he is an extremely cerebral player. Tony Bennett has produced a myriad of quality role players from guys like Aaron Baines from his time at Washington State. And, you know, we saw Brogdon get paid this year. These Tony Bennett guys come in, they understand their role. I don't believe that there's any reason to think that Kyle Guy doesn't know what he needs to do to stick in the league. But I think most importantly, he's got to hit three-pointers. And that's going to be a huge thing for him, his ability to space the floor. It's something that Kings need desperately. So if he's going to find his way onto the floor early, it's going to be as a shot taker.
I'm not a huge draft guy. So Alex's word on the Kings draft picks to me sound pretty good.
So moving on to other offseason acquisitions. Kings were busy, picked up Corey Joseph, Dwayne Dedman, Rashawn Holmes, Tyler Lydon, Trevor Ariza, and re-signed Harrison Barnes. Thoughts on bringing these guys in and Barnes back?
Yeah, Barnes is obviously the crown jewel of the summer. I mean, even though it goes back to him, you know, the trade last season, bringing him in as a guy, and I think we'll sort of get into what Harrison Barnes is a little bit later in this. I don't want to steal that thunder from later, but Barnes is a guy who can get a bucket if you need him to. I think ideally you probably want him more in that off ball, kind of running in transition, being able to take shots and be able to defend multiple positions. Then you got Dwayne Dedman. I think that's a pretty cut and dry answer. You don't want Marvin Bagley taking a ton of burn at center just in the regular season. So you go get a guy like Dwayne Dedman who can just play that center, give you some rim protection, and then be able to, you know, shift to a smaller lineup as you get later in the game. Same with Trevor Ariza. Like I said, you're padding that depth at the wing. Ariza is a 15-year vet. He's a guy who can shoot three-pointers. I wouldn't imagine you're going to see very many of their additions late in games, late in close games, in playoff games, wherever they do end up playing. I think it's probably going to be a lot of their core guys, but with the exception of Barnes. Barnes probably slides into that four spot and spends a lot of time soaking that up in smaller lineups. Depending, I mean, you've got Bielitsa, you've got Harry Giles, some other guys, but it's going to be really interesting to see how this lineup shapes up because the Kings have about 10, you know, pretty solid NBA players, and figuring out how to fit them all together, how to do those rotations is actually a pretty big deal early in the season.
We did a live reaction to free agency, and I was a lot higher on the Kings than Nick and company when we had the show. I liked the Kings offseason. You know, getting Dwayne Dedman, I think, is a nice serviceable center, a veteran. I think Trevor Ariza, even though I think it's more likely he gets traded at some point, depending on how their season is going. But again, another veteran at the wing position. Corey Joseph, slight overpay, but watching him play in Indiana, that's a guy who gives you 120% every single night, does all of the little things, a very good defensive guard. The offense is a little shaky, but he's a great backup point guard. And then Harrison Barnes, you know, you traded for him. You had to bring him back. I think the money is solid for Harrison Barnes. Does his game elevate any further at this point? I'm not so sure, But I think overall they added the right pieces to make this team slightly better by adding in some of these vets to kind of help these young guys as they continue to progress. None of these deals are overly long. And then shout out to Tyler Lydon. He's from me and Nick's hometown area of Dutchess County, the 845. So way to represent. and best of luck in Sacramento.
Please have an NBA career. No, I'm just kidding.
I want to jump in there and just touch on one thing, because Corey, I actually want to know your opinion on this. Corey Joseph, not a super great ball handler. He was in the 26th percentile as a ball handler in pick and roll situations. That's a big, big part of the Kings offense. That's something that they do a lot. I think 40% of their offense came out of pick and roll situations last year. I'm not super high on his fit with the team. I thought that was really kind of a weird thing. Can you talk me into this? Because obviously we know what Corey Joseph is, and he's a talented player, but I just didn't see him meshing super well in that backup point guard role.
See, if you're looking for pick and roll, then yeah, this isn't the right guy. I think more so what you want from Corey Joseph is the fact that on the defensive end is a guy he can guard the one or two because he is strong. So I think more so you're leaning for him on the defensive side of things. Whereas from the point guard position, the one good thing about Corey Joseph is he does look to push the tempo a little bit. So I'm guessing that's also why the Kings were interested in him, because he does like to get out and try and run in transition.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I just wanted to know, because that was one thing where I was like, this is, seems a little weird to me. And I know you as a Pacers fan, were going to give me a little more insight on that one.
And I will say too, shooting-wise, he finished with a 32% click from three last year. There was a decent amount of stretch last season where he was shooting, I think, like near 40% from three, and then he got extremely cold. So this is a guy, too, that the numbers aren't great, but he is a streaky shooter, so there are stretches where he can actually knock down some long-distance shots.
That makes sense.
And Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like they could probably have, if they have Bogdanović come off the bench, play him with Joseph and kind of let Bogdanović have the ball in his hands more.
Oh, most definitely. That was one of my Bogdanović points. He was 94th percentile in wings among assist percentage. He's a guy who is an elite, elite wing creator. And you have a couple of guys. You've got Fox. You've got Bogdanović. You even have some secondary creation with a guy like Bielitsa. There's a lot of good passers on this team. I think fitting them with kind of the black holes and Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley is kind of the tricky part of it. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think if you pair him, you get that like kind of defense offense pairing with Bogdanović. That's something that you could definitely make work. And probably you could play him with, if he can find a shooting stroke, you can probably play him with Fox. They weren't scared to play Mason and Fox together last year, or Yogi Ferrell and Fox together last year as well. That's just not something the Kings have been afraid of. And obviously changing coaching staff may change that mentality, but playing two guards is kind of in vogue. I mean, playing two point guards, we saw it in the NBA finals with Lowry and Van Vliet playing together. It's kind of in vogue now.
Yeah. You see a lot of teams do it. I mean, I know I'm a Nets fan, and they're definitely going to play plenty of minutes with Dinwiddie and Kyrie, or, you know, some people can consider Caris LeVert more of a lead guard, and he's going to get plenty of minutes with Kyrie and Dinwiddie as well. But real quick, what was your favorite move of the offseason? No explanation needed.
I would say drafting Kyle Guy, because I love Kyle Guy and I love Virginia role players.
What do you got for him?
That's a tough question, because like I think Dwayne Dedmon, obviously replacing Willie Cauley-Stein was important. I think Dwayne Dedmon, the guy who's also developed a 3-point shot these last couple of years here, I think his versatility and the fact that he's a very good vet is going to pay dividends for this team, because you need to have a center despite the league going small. I think Dedmon's the prototypical type center that you want in the league going forward.
I want to update mine, and I want to say my actual favorite offseason move was letting Willie Cauley-Stein go. Just bye. Just see you later.
Well, talking about that, departures, Willie Cauley-Stein, Troy Williams, Alec Burks, Corey Brewer, Kosta Kufis, BJ Johnson. Alex already gave who he's happy to see go. Corey, who do you think you're happy to see go, or you wish they kept?
I think everyone at this point knows that if you play for the Florida Gators, and especially if you were a part of the back-to-back championship squad, you're going to have a little bit more leeway with me. And Corey Brewer, just a guy who, like, bounces around. And obviously he doesn't fit with this team. You got Trevor Ariza, who probably does exactly what you tried to get from Corey Brewer last year, a guy who plays some at least annoying defense that can somewhat hit a 3-point shot from the corner and get out in transition. So I think Brewer is a guy I miss just – selfishly. But yeah, none of these guys you really miss, because Alec Burks could never stay healthy.
Alex, anybody you wish they kept, or you're good to see them all go?
No, I really wish they'd kept Frank Mason. He hasn't ever quite been what I wanted him to, but there's always those flashes of like this really, really good NBA player in Frank Mason. And then there are, you know, two or three flashes of or actively bad. He wasn't a guy who scored very efficiently, but he did a lot of things that I really liked, particularly on the defensive end. He was pretty smart, used his body really well. I kind of saw him cut from that mold of smaller guards who can get kind of cagey and defend. I really wish they'd found a spot for him. I do think he'll end up catching on in Milwaukee, but that remains to be seen, I guess.
Now, talking a little bit more about next season, what would you say was the biggest team X factor? Non-player, and it can't be health.
Okay, that's a good one. Keeping everybody healthy is good, but I have two. One of them is three-point shooting, finding the spacers. We have talked about this a lot, just finding guys who can knock down open shots. You do have some guys who don't space the floor super well. Bagley did shoot pretty well after the All-Star break, and that may be something that's developing, but he does a lot of his scoring in post-up situations. In fact, that was his number one. 26% of his attempts came in post-up situations. So you need guys around him who can really space the floor. De'Aaron Fox is a tremendous passer, good feel. And again, you want to just give him as much room as possible. So shooting three-pointers, finding spacers, finding lineups that maximize the space and allow your best players to get where they want to get. And then secondarily, this sort of just branches off of that, is finding secondary creators, guys who will move the basketball. Bielitsa is a tremendously underrated part of this team last year, a guy who would just make an extra pass or drive and use his own gravity to pull a player in to kick the ball out. Finding guys like Bogdanović and Bielitsa, who we have seen excel on the Serbian national team in the World Cup, finding these guys to continue to move the ball is just so, so critical when you have players who can kind of be ball stoppers. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. I think it's just important to address the fact that both Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley, two of the more accomplished scorers on this team, can be ball stoppers. And I think finding players to complement that is super important.
So I went with free throw percentage. This team was a team that was 27th in the league in free throw percentage at 72.6%. Obviously, we know the offense was very good, averaging 114 points per game, which was ninth best in the league. So for me, it's this team, when they get to the line, to take care at the free throw line, get the cherry stripe. Obviously, getting some bets in there like Trevor Ariza, Dwayne Dedman, should help that. But free throws are crucial in this league. And when you have guys like De'Aaron Fox who push the tempo and get to the rim, you just got to make sure that you take care of those cherry stripe shots.
And I went with something a little similar to Alex. I think just the new pieces gelling, you know, finding the lineups that work, finding the rotations that work, you know, that's on Luke Walton, that's on the players, trying to find that chemistry and taking that next step, because it's not like they have, you know, a superstar player as of now. Maybe De'Aaron Fox can take a big jump, but it's more of a collective unit, and I think they need to win as a team. So I think how these pieces kind of come in and gel is going to have a big impact on the season. But starting lineup on opening night.
Starting lineup on opening night, I would wager a guess that's going to be Fox, Hield, Barnes, Bagley, Dedman. I don't think that's going to be their crunch time lineup. I think their crunch time lineup is going to be Fox, Hield, Bogdanović, and then some combination of two of these four, of Barnes, Bielitsa, Bagley, and Giles. But I think that's where you really see the Kings being able to shine, is that flexibility. When you've got a guy like Bielitsa, if you need more floor spacing, or you need a guy who can defend both forward positions, you have a different mix of bigs than I think a lot of teams do. And I think that you'll probably see more Bogdanović and Fox together in crunch time, since those are two guys who can sort of orchestrate their offense.
I have this same exact starting five.
Yeah, really exciting. I have the same one too.
Great minds.
Yeah, I think this is like kind of the one to go to. It just makes the most sense. But who would be your player to watch next season? This can be positive or negative.
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, there are so many guys that we've touched on all the reasons. You know, getting to the rim, getting those free throw attempts is so important, putting pressure on the defense. But I think if I just had to pick a guy, I would pick Bagley. He's in his second year. He was inefficient, but he was very spectacular. He was one of those guys that made about three or four plays a game where you're like, oh, this guy's going to be really good. And I think that in his second year, learning how to apply himself a little bit more judiciously, learning how to be able to, you know, use that offensive rebounding and use his left hand and use his post ability, and then start to develop a face-up game. I think that Fox is obviously the best player on this team, but Bagley is a guy they would like to see enter into the discussion as one of those up-and-coming players in the league. And I think in year two, you've got all the jitters out, you've got all the freshman jitters out, and you get a chance to finally settle in and understand what you're going to be as an NBA player. So I think this is a really, really big year for his development.
Players to watch. I'm going to say De'Aaron Fox. And I know that may be somewhat of an easy or cop-out answer, but obviously De'Aaron Fox last season having his first breakout year in year two, you know, if playing in 81 games, shooting 45, 37, and 72, want to see the free throw percentage get a little bit up there. Did like for the fact that he got to the free throw line more than his rookie season, but I just want to see what else can he do with more scoring options on this team now, getting Ariza and Dedmon, bringing back Barnes. What does this team look like when those guys continue to develop and De'Aaron Fox has more space to operate? So for me, it's De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, both really good picks. I think you could go either way. Obviously, Fox is going to be a guy because of the jump he took last year. But I like the Bagley pick just because of what we saw post-All-Star break from him. And just like you mentioned, Alex, there was plays where you watched him and you're like, oh, wow, he can be really, really good if he puts it all together. And I think for a lot of rookies, it's just a year in the league, you get more experience. And then having some more vets on the roster, I think, can help him and take that next step to develop. But worst case scenario for the Kings season.
I mean, it can go bad. There's no doubt about it. You rack up a few injuries. Some guys miss some games. The West is, as we alluded to at the top, just absolutely stacked. Probably would put their floor, I mean, barring the absolute bottom falling out of it, I'd probably put their floor around 29, 30 wins in a really worst-case scenario. I could see them going 12th or 13th in the West if everything just went incredibly poorly. And I think, you know, you said health can't be the X factor, but I think in this instance, you have to think what's worst-case scenario would be Fox missing time. Fox is a guy, if Bagley were to miss time, or if any of these other guys were to miss time, they're replaceable to an extent. I don't think anything Aaron Fox brings to the table is replaceable by anyone else on this roster. I think an injury to him would completely change the complexion and the DNA of this Kings roster.
I think for me, the biggest negative or the worst case scenario would be that we just don't see, and this is, again, I feel like a competent answer to a degree, we just don't see any more development, or we see a year of stunted development. Maybe De'Aaron Fox comes back, puts up the same similar numbers, but doesn't seem to have gotten necessarily better by a huge margin. Maybe Buddy Hield has less efficiency this year. For me, it'd be this core not taking a continued step forward.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at the player development, that'd be a worst case scenario of them not improving. Like Alex mentioned, you know, De'Aaron Fox getting hurt, I think low 30s, but I think any scenario where they're not better than last season is almost a worst case scenario, because you spend the money, you want the players to get better. Obviously, you can't control injuries, but if the team doesn't improve, I think that's kind of a worst case scenario because you've already invested this money. But what would be best case scenario?
I mean, best case scenario is we're going to the playoffs. Seeding doesn't really matter. It's going to be tough across the board. If you're the 7 seed, if you're the 8 seed, if you're the 6 seed, whatever. Just getting into the playoffs and getting that absolutely vital experience to let these young guys grow, just to let them gel. And your Brooklyn Nets is a perfect example of this, Nick. This is a team who got into playoffs last year with a pretty good roster. We went for a very long time talking about that treadmill of mediocrity and how teams didn't want to be on it. But I think the Raptors are a good example of this. Your Brooklyn Nets are a good example of, if you keep a pretty good roster together, you can start to put the pieces over time. If you can get into that 7 or 8 seed, or if you can creep up to the 4th seed, you don't necessarily have to be on either end of the spectrum anymore. You can build from the middle, and that just requires some intelligent maneuvering and using your contracts correctly. But most importantly, it is developing your homegrown talent. Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, these guys who come into the program as basically clay and they get molded into quality NBA players, that allows you to A, spend more freely, find guys who can come in and supplement their talent, and B, it just gives you that flexibility to say, hey, look, we're a program on the rise, and being able to sell that to guys like Kyrie Irving or guys like Kawhi Leonard, even though he didn't end up staying, and just getting them to buy in, getting that superstar talent kind of comes from the ability of, like, hey, we're pretty good.
And I think from the Kings, sorry to cut you off, Corey, it's just also you're working on trying to change a perspective of the organization.
Absolutely.
So I think any type of success and even, you know, getting to the playoffs is like, all right, guys, like, we're not bad. Like, we're actually doing things right, and player development's huge. But go ahead, Corey.
Well, I just want to say, Nick, you have a lot of experience being around a team that did just that in the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they went from being a laughingstock to now arguably in one of the best positions in the entire league.
So I agree with that being the best case scenario, is that you have – you pretty much put the league on notice that there's a young core that's maybe missing one big piece and some smaller pieces and actually competing for a deep playoff run and maybe even a title. So I think that would definitely be the best case scenario. But also, I mean, just making the playoffs finally would be a win for the entire fan base and franchise.
Yeah, best case for me too is getting into the playoffs, seeing the players improve, and then like, all right, we have building blocks and maybe we have so many young pieces that we could move some of them and bring in another star in here and we could take that next step. But that's for a whole nother pod, maybe next year. Actual prediction for the season and where they finish in the division.
I'm going to say they're finished fourth, which is going to sound immediately almost, you know, counterintuitive to making the playoffs or whatever. But last season, Oklahoma City finished fourth. They were 49-33, and they were the sixth seed in the West. So there is a path for a team to be the fourth best team in their division, but one of the best teams in the Western Conference. So I think they probably finished behind the Clippers, behind the Lakers, behind the Warriors. I'm not super sure how what I would put in 1, 2, 3 because of the rest situation, because of the injuries. But I'm pretty sure that I think I can safely say that the Kings are going to end up in that fourth spot, which I would put them at like 41, 42 wins. They probably need a little bit higher. I think they're probably going to end up in the 9 seed. I think this is a really, really tough year. If this is just, you know, just looking over their schedule, I fingers crossed. I really hope. I want to see this team make the playoffs. I really want to see them. I want to see New Orleans. I want to see Dallas. But man, this field, you just can't harp on it enough. It's not just a summer NBA topic to say, man, the West is stacked, because when you just start breaking these teams down, good Lord.
Yeah. I had them finishing fourth in the division as well. Sorry, Phoenix Sun fans. You're not there yet. I have 43 wins on the season. I have them somewhere between the 8 seed and 10 seed in the West. Like you mentioned, Alex, you know, the Mavericks, the Pelicans, all these teams are relatively close, I think. The gap isn't huge. And as we know from years past, it feels like we're watching the Western Conference until the final night of the season, right? The standings are constantly flipping couple months, which is extremely fun as basketball fans to watch and to constantly watch every game matter more those late games in the season. I think there's still a chance they make the playoffs. I just am not ready to lock them into that spot yet. There's just too many teams ahead of them that I still think have better potential.
Yeah, I think you can look at a couple of teams. Sorry, Nick, I didn't mean to jump in on you. But I think you can look at a couple of teams as maybe slide teams who are going to slide. I think Portland, there's some potential there, depending on how much time Nurkic misses. And just, you know, their overall cohesiveness and ability to attack. Obviously, Golden State's got some injury concerns. I think they're going to be better than people think. The Lakers can really, I mean, if you get an injury to LeBron or Anthony Davis, that's not a very good roster around them. And then San Antonio, I think there are just some questions about what they're going to do. And I think that ultimately is what it boils down to, is you look at these teams, those four particularly, if the Kings can get a little help, if somebody can slide, I think they are the natural team that just sort of slots in there. If one of those seven we talked about at the top were to slide.
Yeah, there's always that one random team that drops out of the playoffs for whatever reason it might be, you know, injury, lack of chemistry, some behind-the-scenes stuff. So the Kings have a shot. I'll have them as a fourth in the division, finishing 41-41, and just missing the playoffs at like that 9th or 10th seed. Sorry, Kings fans. But moving on, do you guys have any thoughts, storylines, or anything you want to touch on before we get to League Pass?
I think one of the things that you got to really look at is just how well the Serbian national team has played. And I know obviously a lot of that contributed to Jokic, but both Bogdanović and Bjelica have been fantastic. They have shown exactly what the Kings need in that ability to be secondary ball movers, to hit spot up shots, even to run some offense through both of these guys. And I think that kind of improvement, particularly when you have this question about what's going to happen to Bjelica, it's really interesting to look at the numbers. Bjelica's shot He shot 40% as a starter. He shot 35% from three when he came off the bench. He shot 48% on field goals. He shot 39% when he came off the bench. Bagley's probably going to take that spot, and Bielitsa is going to be shifted into that bench role. But maybe playing alongside Bogdanović and having that chemistry that carries over from the summer helps them find a second unit that is still able to attack on the same axis that they want to be able to attack on. So I think that's something that's really worth watching. And then the other very obvious thing, I think, among Kings fans is how healthy is Harry Giles. Harry Giles is another one of these guys who's just insanely talented, but can he stay on the floor? He played 58 games last year after being a healthy scratch all of his freshman year, and he's a guy who can do a lot of things. He's a tremendous big-to-big passer, which is something that when you have this many bigs, you're going to want to utilize. You know, he and Bagley played together pretty well because Bagley manned that low post, and Giles kind of manned that upper elbow kind of situation. And I think having a healthy Harry Giles is pivotal to what they want to do down the stretch, closing games, because I think you probably want him to be your center. I think there's probably an argument to have Bagley play the five as well. But those are the two things that I think merit talking about for the Kings this year.
Yeah, Bogdanović was probably like one of my favorite players to watch. It felt like every time I put on a Kings game last year, he was playing really well, just making all the right plays. Obviously, I didn't watch every single game, but he's a guy that definitely stuck out that feels like he doesn't get the necessary love in the NBA.
Definitely.
Yeah, but, plus he tore his meniscus. Sorry, Nick, I didn't
know. No, go ahead. Again.
He tore his meniscus last year in September. He injured it before that, and then he tore it again last year playing for the Serbian national team. He's had a full year. It was just a slight tear of the meniscus, and it kind of plagued him all season long. I think having him healthy is going to be a really big benefit for them, even if he's on the bench or wherever he ends up playing.
Yeah, having good bench players is important in the NBA nowadays, especially during the regular season. But moving to League Pass, 1 through 10, how would you rank the Kings?
Oh, I'm giving them a solid 8. This is a very, very fun team to watch. Actually, when you sent me the layout for the show, I listed all 30 teams to see where
next level.
Yeah, to where I had them. They ended up in Tier 3, but I think the teams that are in Tier 3 are pretty telling. They're in Tier 3 with the New Orleans Pelicans, the Dallas Mavericks, the Brooklyn Nets, the Atlanta Hawks, and Sacramento. Those are all teams that when they're on, particularly if you know they're playing that 1 7 o'clock game, you're going to want to catch these teams playing or that late 10:30 game, I suppose, if you're on the West Coast. These are really young, fun teams, and I'm just so pumped to watch all five of these teams.
Yeah, I definitely think this is going to be an exciting League Pass team. Funny enough, I think this was definitely a team that was in my top 10 last year of teams I watched, at least I feel like it was. I'm giving them a solid 7, which is really good for me. Alex, you may not be too aware, I normally give teams some shit-ass League Pass ratings. so 7 is very telling.
Yeah, I got 8 as well, same as Alex. I think this is a really fun team. They play fast, a lot of young talent, see how the vets work in. And I look at League Pass sometimes, too, as they're not an extremely good team. So a lot of the games will be close. We'll be down to the wire in the last 2 minutes, and I think that's probably one of the more exciting things in the NBA. But what TV show would you compare to the Kings? Now, this can be based off of watchability, or it can be based off of the plot of the TV show.
This was the toughest question in the whole show for me. I had to really dig on this one, and I settled on the show Lost. And the reason I settled on the show Lost is it was a super exciting show, but sometimes it was incredibly confusing. And I think the Kings have potential to be A, super exciting, and B, at periods, incredibly confusing if they can't put all the pieces together. So it's prestige television. You're going to want to watch the Kings, even though, by the way, the Kings only have one nationally televised game. It's on March 11th. Wow. Yep, they're playing the New Orleans Pelicans, which will be a fantastic game, but that's their one nationally televised game, so you're going to have to kind of dig for them. They've got 7 on NBA TV, but you may have to dig for them. But to me, this is one of those teams, like, I would try to get them on TNT in that second game as often as I could, obviously competing with the Lakers and the Clippers and the Warriors, a lot of good teams on the far West Coast to compete in that 10:30 time slot. So, yeah, I get it, but at the same time, I kind of don't get it.
You think they'd at least get like 4 or 5.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
What do you got, Corey, for TV show?
I'm kind of torn. You're going to get mad. You're going to get mad because it's a Marvel show.
Oh, that's okay.
I mean, yeah, but I guess
I thought you were about to say like Rick and Morty, and then I would have really been mad.
No. I gotta save those for higher up teams. So I was kind of torn between Daredevil and Punisher, because both of them, like, I liked, but they weren't great. There's definitely flaws in both of them, but I'm gonna say Punisher. I'm a big John Bethnal fan. Obviously that show is extremely violent. If you're too young, do not watch that show. but I think overall it's entertaining, just like the Kings are going to be entertaining. But it may be a little bit lackluster because I think I wasn't too thrilled with the ending of season two of The Punisher, but I haven't watched it in a couple months. So, but yeah, that's my show.
That reference is just completely lost on me. So yeah, good job, Corey.
I think Punisher might be one of the best. Daredevil and Punisher are probably the two best of all the Marvel series on Netflix, but that's for another show. I'm going to go with Blacklist here, and that's not based off the plot. It's just watchability. I think it's a pretty good show. It's not my favorite show. Just like I view the Kings, they're not my favorite team, but they'll be a team that I watch a good amount next season. But that wraps it up. Alex, great having you on. Tell everyone where they can find you and find your work and on Twitter and whatnot.
You can follow me on Twitter at Alex West Red Team. As we talked about at the top of the show, I'm redteamscouting.com. We do a lot of stuff, particularly pertaining to the draft. We're going to do a lot more NBA-centric stuff this year. We're still going to handle some draft content, but we're going to do a lot of team-building things. We have toyed with some ideas, and unfortunately, we ended up losing our video guy really close to the start of the season. So we're still kind of in reset mode of what it's going to be, but we're really excited. I'm really excited to watch more NBA. I probably watched, I feel like, 8,000 college basketball games last year, and I really wanted to watch more of the NBA, and that was my point that I made in production meetings and getting ready for this year. So I'm going to watch more of the NBA. I'm going to write about it. Still going to be writing about college basketball. So if you followed us last year, don't worry. We're still going to do our draft content, but we're going to try and pepper in some more NBA-centric stuff as well. So you can check me out at Alex West Red Team on Twitter and redteamscouting.com.
Awesome.
Corey, tell them where they can find you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWALHoops, K-W-A-L Hoops. You can go check out the Full Access Hoops podcast, and be sure to check out the NBA Alley Preview Series. This is just one of many.
One of many. You can find OTG on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Obviously, the website, otgbasketball.com. Find me on Twitter at OTG_Nick. Big thanks to Alex for hopping on. Corey, always a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can check out the show iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. Also, head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass. OTG5 discount code will get you $5 off some OTG merch.
Peace out, knuckleheads.